You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
There was a time when New York could boast about having a slew of repertory movie houses, but over the years, most of them have disappeared. But even back in the good old days, it was difficult for independent filmmakers to get their work shown, except in little hole-in-the-wall makeshift theaters. Well, Film Forum may have started out that way 40 years ago, 50 folding chairs, a 16-millimeter projector, and a coffee maker, but it has blossomed since into one of New York's treasures, called Our Idea of Heaven by Time Out New York, An Oasis by David Denby of The New Yorker, Our Most Nourishing Cinema by Vanity Fair. And starting tomorrow through the 20th, the Museum of Modern Art is having a program of documentaries that premiered at Film Forum. Joining me now to celebrate what has turned out to be an illustrious history is Karen Cooper, its longtime director. Welcome back to our show.
Thank you, Lenny.
How many films is MoMA going to be showing?
I think it's about 36 different titles and maybe 22 different feature-length films. There are a bunch of shorts playing as well.
And I'm sure that when you were thinking about which ones to do, you went very far back in the history of Film Forum. Were you surprised by some of the things you found?
Interestingly enough, it was not a difficult list to compile. I tried to focus upon a lot of titles that played in the 70s, 80s, and 90s and pay less attention to more recent films from the last decade.
Well, you've premiered a lot of feature films, some of which went on to great success. Why did you limit this tribute to documentaries?
You know, I was tying in with the Museum of Modern Art's Documentary Month, which is every February. And in looking over what I had been programming for all these decades, I found that my heart was really with the documentaries and that I had done so much with documentary premieres from an early date. You know, documentaries were for a long time considered box office poison. It was even referred to as the D word until really the days of Michael Moore and the huge success he had with Roger and Me. Documentaries rarely opened in commercial theaters. And
we saw them on television.
Exactly. And you saw, you know, pretty mediocre and boring and didactic documentaries in high school, how to cross the street and car safety and this sort of thing. So the public's notion of this form was that it was pretty dull stuff. And in fact, Michael Moore changed all that, and he really did show that documentaries can be entertaining and lively and controversial.
Although you were showing some interesting documentaries before then. It was a form that was favored by the French.
That's true, and we've shown a lot of French documentary. Chris Marker and Agnes Varda's documentaries, and certainly a lot of work by the wonderful Werner Herzog. So, yeah, there's a history there, and we preceded Michael Moore by a few decades as well. The first film I ever played, which is called Asylum, and in fact is the film that's premiering tomorrow night at the museum, the museum's show, was a documentary about R.D. Lang's therapeutic community in London.
Mm, that sounds interesting. Did you look at them all again? Do they all hold up?
I didn't look at them all again. I really don't have to know that they hold up. I mean, Asylum, I actually by chance saw maybe 5 or 10 years ago, and I was thrilled to see how strong it is. But these are films that made a tremendous impression upon me when I first saw them, when I showed them, which is often as long as 6 months to a year after the initial viewing. It's not something that fades from your mind easily.
Well, what were the circumstances at the beginning when you were showing films mm-hmm. like Asylum? Where were you showing it?
Film Forum started in a tiny space, as you mentioned, the 50 folding chairs and the projector the size of a bread box. It was founded by two young cineasts in 1970.
And there were a whole bunch of groups, clubs in New York
true.
At the time.
Yeah.
What distinguished Film Forum?
Well, what attracted me to Film Forum is that Peter Feinstein, who was then running it in 71, 72, was... he was, first of all, he was selecting really good films, but films that I personally was responsive to. I have to say that the more experimental films that played at the Whitney's film program and the Filmmakers Cooperative, which later became the anthology film archives tended toward the experimental and the structural, and not really my cup of tea. But some of the work Peter showed, I thought, was tremendously strong, like Michael Rubo's early documentaries, Waiting for Fidel, The Sad Song of Yellow Skin. And I was struck by the fact that Peter's sense of his audience was the general public, not the cognoscenti, not people who are only themselves artists and filmmakers. And I like that idea of bringing these kinds of films to all kinds of people.
So what do you look for when you're choosing something to show at the Film Forum?
Well, I try to think that I'm not looking for anything in particular, that I'm really approaching everything I screen with an open mind. It could be a 3-minute animated short, and it could be an 8.5-hour epic documentary like Connie Field's film that we have coming up in April called Have You Heard from Johannesburg, which is, I think, will be the final word on the anti-apartheid movement and how it came to a successful conclusion over many decades of international struggle.
I'm sure you've shown a few controversial ones as well.
Sure, sure. I think probably the most controversial work we've shown was not documentary filmmaking, but I'm trying to think. It's a drama made by an Australian called Romper Stomper, and it starred Russell Crowe in an early role as a skinhead. And while it wasn't sympathetic to skinheads, he was certainly the protagonist, and the audience included a whole bunch of neo-Nazis. We had to bring in security people because the staff was scared, the rest of the audience was scared. It was kind of a creepy screening.
So in what form did Film Forum exist before you got the job, before you became the director?
Well, got the job and became the director sounds very highfalutin considering what was going on. It consisted of two positions, mine and the projectionist.
And this is still in this little hole in the wall?
This is still the hole in the wall on West 88th Street. It was a walk-up. I immediately...
And weekends mostly, right?
Did only weekends.
Weekdays?
Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, one screening. And in fact, the whole thing was illegal because there was no certificate of occupancy and, you know, none of that was done properly. In 1975, I moved Film Forum to what was then a burgeoning Soho, to the Van Damme Theater, and played there also on weekends.
That's just around the corner from us here.
Right, right.
But it was a very different movie, a different neighborhood in those days.
Different neighborhood, and it was a legitimate theater that I had adapted for showing movies and adapted in a rather haphazard way, frankly. The screen was still too small and the rake was not dramatic enough and so forth. So in 1980, with the aid of a Ford Foundation low-interest loan, I was able to build a twin cinema on Watt Street, a few blocks further downtown.
And I think that's where most people first came to know Film
exactly.
Forum.
Right. That's when we became a full-time movie house.
And you started this other approach where you showed, where you premiered films or showed films that were new and all in one theater, and then you showed older films in the other.
Exactly.
And that's when
yeah.
Bruce Goldstein joined
right,
you.
Right. Bruce joined me in the end of 86 and established a really far-reaching repertory program that he's developed over more than 25 years and is just without a peer, as far as I'm concerned, and many other people.
Well, he's been imitated by repertory programs all over the world since.
Imitated, but never successfully reproduced.
So there you were on Watt Street, not far from the entrance of the Holland Tunnel, in this wonderful theater. Why did you have to leave?
Real estate. I mean, construction. The building was a freestanding structure, and it was sold to large developer to build a skyscraper. And at that point, we spent about a year raising over $3 million to build within another large building. We're actually the bottom floor of 200 Varick Street with our entrance on West Houston now between 6th and Varick. We've been there now for 20 years.
And you have a marquee. Was that important?
Well, we had a marquee on Watt Street. In fact, it's the same marquee. Mm-hmm. It was removed, put in storage, and reinstalled. But, yeah, the marquee is a wonderful iconographic, clue that this is a movie house.
I imagine you were learning on the fly.
Exactly. A lot of trial and error.
And wound up with, even on Watt Street, you wound up with better food than other places, better popcorn.
Actually, there was no popcorn on Watt Street.
The popcorn was only here?
I finally broke down and got popcorn on Houston Street. No, I was anti-popcorn for years. It was the smell that worried me. And then Dan Talbot, who owns Lincoln Plaza and previously Cinema Studio and the legendary New Yorker Theater, told me, Karen, it's okay to have popcorn, just don't allow butter. So I settled for that compromise.
My guest is Karen Cooper, who's director of Film Forum, and her series Karen Cooper, Carte Blanche, 40 Years of Documentary Premieres at Film Forum, who is running from this Wednesday, that's tomorrow, through the 20th at the Museum of Modern Art. If you want a full schedule, you can go to our show page at wnyc.org. So how do you find films? You go to Sundance?
My colleague Mike Maggiore goes to Sundance. In fact, he just came back. Mike and I really share programming responsibility. But together we go to, well, he goes to Cannes, I go to Berlin, I go to the Documentary Festival in Amsterdam every year. And very fortunately, we've gotten a grant from the Robert Sterling Clark Foundation to be going to festivals in the next couple of years in Africa, Asia, and Latin America. So we're going to spread our net even wider. But festivals are only one part of the process. Many, many films come in and just over the transom. And having the possibility of looking at work on DVD has made it much easier to see international productions.
Now, you mentioned The New Yorker. There was a time when The New Yorker was showing the kinds of films that you often show.
Sure.
And there was The Charles and there was The Bleecker Street. There were a whole bunch of theaters around town. Why do you think they all went under? Is it because you are a nonprofit and they were for-profit enterprises?
I think the nonprofit factor is a critical one. The fact that we have state and city and federal monies as well as private funding, it gives us that financial buffer so we can take risks and we can fail. Of course, we often succeed and, you know, people say, oh, gee, it's always so crowded there. But in fact, come on a Tuesday afternoon, not so crowded. The other issue, and this is very special to New York, is simply real estate values. It is very hard to run any small business if you don't own the building you're in.
Now, there have been predictions that movie theaters are going to go under because of DVDs. Now, people can download movies. Has that been a problem for you?
Well, it hasn't been a problem for us, and I don't expect it will be. But we are in a unique position. New York is such a big city and a cosmopolitan city and a city with a diverse and sophisticated population. I would think in smaller towns that DVDs would take their toll on movie going. It hasn't been an issue for us.
Mm-hmm. Also, you're showing films that are hard to get anywhere else, although the films in rep are often available, but Bruce has a way of putting things together that make them suddenly attractive again.
Well,
everything old is new again.
This is true, but you also have to say to Bruce's credit that he does these marvelous series like Kurosawa or Preston Sturges or Billy Wilder, and he will not begin to organize those series unless the studios or the archive or wherever his prints are coming from, unless they'll promise him a certain percentage of new prints or restored prints. So Bruce is very rigorous about assuring that what goes on our screen is really going to look first rate and be a lot more exciting to experience than watching a DVD at home.
I remember years ago during a festival of Columbia Pictures where the man from Columbia said, you know, many of these films might have disappeared if Bruce hadn't forced us to go and restore them. Mm-hmm. And, of course, then they start making money from them because after they show at Film Forum, they wind up at art houses around the country.
Right. This is also true for our premieres. I mean, we will open a film in New York and play it for a couple of weeks, and perhaps it will do well enough that it'll stay on with us for many weeks, as certain films have. Films like Crumb and Paris is Burning played for 6 and 7 months, respectively.
But those would be your hits.
Those would be some of our biggest hits. Certainly The War Room by D.A. Pennybaker and Chris Hegedus, and, you know, many other films that are, in fact, in the museum show were very big hits with us. In its own way, The Battle of Chile, which we played back on Van Damme Street in the 70s, was a huge hit. But because these films show that they can make money in New York, which is a very competitive market, obviously, they will go on to play at theaters throughout the country.
Do you find that people are coming to you because you've had this great track record?
actually, that seems to be the common truism. Oh, you've got members and you've got a built-in audience and, you know, you're downtown. I don't really believe that. I think that people are so crushed for time and so stressed and have limited entertainment dollars, especially in this economy, that we really are competing with so many other ways to spend your time and money that we have to really market our films in a very smart and, I hesitate to use the word, but aggressive way. I think that's really the truth of the matter.
You mentioned films that had long runs. One was Integrate Silence, mm-hmm. which was a three-hour movie about monks. What were they, Carthusian monks?
That's right.
Who did not talk, and that went on for a very long time. Those are surprise hits, I'm sure.
Isn't that marvelous? Not only that, we had a Carthusian monk who lived on the Upper West Side who had been in that particular setting in this, you know, marvelous French convent, and he came to the theater and answered questions. So here, after 3 hours of silence, you had the monk actually speaking, which was, you know, it was written up in the talk of the town.
I have a particular affection for Film Forum that's very personal. 25 years ago, when I became the host of the show, it took a lot of effort to convince many guests to come all the way downtown to where our studios were located then, in the municipal building at the foot of the Brooklyn Bridge, just across from City Hall, pretty far away from other media outlets. But when the noted Russian poet Yevgeny Yevtushenko was having a film that was being shown at Film Forum, to our amazement, we managed to persuade you to have him join us for an interview. And then later, when we tried to book other famous guests, we'd say, well, Yevgeny Yevtushenko came on the show. And, you know, what could they say? Okay, we'll come as well. And that really did open the door for us. And,
oh, that's great to hear.
We're so pleased that by your success, but we're also pleased that we could draw on your success for our success.
I had no idea that was a seminal moment.
Well, and then since then, there have been many others. And I think that one of the things that we have in common is that we both want to, when I say we, WNYC and Film Forum, we want to not repeat what everybody mm-hmm. else does. We want to find that thing that's going to be great before everybody else does, and perhaps be a part of making it into something mm-hmm. special.
Yeah, I think
so. You must be very proud of
I'm proud, but there are certainly challenges ahead. You know, I spend a lot more time thinking about what's opening next month and next year than I do about the past 38 years, my 38 years at least. And I think that's as it should be.
Well, we will be celebrating your 38 years at the Museum of Modern Art. Are you going to do anything at Film Forum as well?
Well, we're selling our booklet. I've done a brochure that gives all the text to the museum show, as well as background and interview. I've interviewed myself, in fact, plus all kinds of great photos of our staff and guests, and a tribute to Freud Bartlett and Sirius Business Company, which was a West Coast experimental distribution company that I did a great deal of business with in the 70s and early 80s.
So it's good to interview yourself because you know which questions you have the answers to. Karen Cooper is director of Film Forum, and her series, Karen Cooper Carte Blanche, 40 Years of Documentary Premieres at Film Forum, runs from tomorrow through the 20th at the Museum of Modern Art. And if you want a full schedule, you'll find it on our show page at WNYC.org. Thank you so much for being with us again.
Thank you.